And welcome to Cholangio Heroes, a video podcast produced by the Cholangiocarcinoma Foundation. I'm Jennifer Weaver, and I will be the host of this episode. Joining me today is, and you'll have to help me with your last name, Jim, but we have a special guest, Jim, and your last name?
Hoofnagel.
Hoofnagel, yes, right on. And he is joining us for this episode to tell us a little bit more about himself and how he got connected to the disease. So, Jim, let's start out by what is your connection and how to cholangiocarcinoma?
Well, I'll keep it pretty short, but it was just about 3 years ago, next month, my wife and I were at a soccer game with some of our kids and grandkids. And our youngest daughter looked at me and she said, "Dad, you're yellow." And it was funny because I'd just seen her the day before and she didn't say anything. I said, "No, of course I'm not yellow." I went home and a couple hours later, my wife said, "You better look in the mirror. You're really yellow." And it was kind of funny because I just told my primary care physician a few days before that I don't need to come in every 3 months. I'll see you in 6 months because I'm fine. First thing Monday morning, I had to call him and say, "I need to come see you." Went to his office. He said, "Come over here and stand in the light." And I stood up in the light and he goes, "Jim, you're yellow." And I thought, oh my gosh. Okay. I had no idea what this meant. Very, very quickly, he sent me for the ultrasound and then onto my gastro guy. And within 4 or 5 days, my gastro guy got some results and he stared deep into my eyes and he said, "You have cholangiocarcinoma." I had no idea what he was talking about. And I came home and did like I'm sure everybody else does, went on Dr. Google and got scared to death because there's nothing encouraging there.
Yeah.
But I got very fortunate. My wife and I made the rounds of several different hospitals here in Dallas, UT Southwest. We went up to St. Louis, to Barnes, and then down to MD Anderson and reviewed doctors that were recommended to us. And I felt that MD Anderson was the best fit. All of them were wonderful. So long story short, initially I was not resectable, started chemo, GemCis, the basic package. And I was diagnosed on September 29th. And even in December, I was still not resectable. So we continued chemo. And then in February of 20, my surgeon at Anderson felt that I was ready and that I could become resectable. So long story short, he went through the whole routine, opened me up for what was going to be a 10 or 12 hour operation. And then I remember waking up and he came into the room and he said, "You know, Jim, we had to terminate the operation." I thought, oh my gosh.
Oh, wow.
You know, all this leading up to it and all the stress on the family and everything else. Well, it turned out that I had a perforated gallbladder and he couldn't see it. You know, I probably had hundreds of scans done by then and nobody could see that I had a perforated gallbladder. So he had me open, he fixed it, and it wasn't entirely wasted. He made preparations for a liver resection, which is what I didn't say initially, that, you know, that's what our objective was, a liver resection. Closed me back up in February. And back then, Abraxane wasn't widely available. It was known, but I think the problem with it was FDA approved for pancreatic cancer, which is right next door, but not approved for cholangio. And I had two oncologists, one here in the Dallas area where I live, and one down in Houston. And both would prescribe Abraxane for me and continually got turned down. And I'd ask them, you know, "Look, how much does it cost? Are there clinical trials? What can we do? I'll pay for it if I can afford it." But within about 3 months, they did get Abraxane approved. And that's when the hair left, but I didn't care. Our family got together and did a little family head shave. So this is on into May, June of 20. And by August, my surgeon felt comfortable enough again to attempt the liver resection. So in August of 20, a little over 2 years ago, I had a successful liver resection. So I'm here still to talk about it. And I'm glad.
Are you undergoing any treatment now?
No, I didn't. By the time my tumor was removed, The pathology said it was clinically dead before it came out. I'm sure that that probably had a great deal to do with the Abraxane. And I also incorporated THC into my plan about midway through. I can't affirm that that did anything in particular other than help me sleep very well. But that tumor was dead by the time I had the liver resection. So I'm clinically cancer-free, not in remission.
No evidence of disease, right on. So was your tumor inside the liver or outside of the liver?
Outside.
It was outside. So cholangiocarcinoma is cancer of the bile ducts. So people joining us may not be aware of that. And we're talking with Jim today about his experience with the disease. And today he's clear, no evidence of disease. So with that, at any point, how did you get in contact with the Cholangiocarcinoma Foundation?
It was interesting. Our oldest daughter does corporate retreat planning things where doctors get together for conventions. And one of her doctor groups, several of her doctor groups are gastro doctors, liver doctors. And when I was diagnosed, she had access to hundreds of people that knew what cholangio was. So she helped provide some of the suggested doctors that we should visit. And as uncommon as this disease is, one of her sorority sisters from college was diagnosed 2 years before me. And she was much further along than I was when I was diagnosed. But quite thankfully, she's still here too after a successful resection. So to answer your question, Rachel found the foundation on Facebook. I'm not a big Facebooker, and she is. So she's the one that made the initial connection for me.
And so how did you get connected? So she gave you the information, and then what did you do with it?
You know, it's been a couple of years. I was in the mode, especially early on. I found the foundation very early on. I was just accumulating notebooks of information. And there is so much information on the foundation website. So I'd be there researching something, which would lead me, you know, off on a research project to dig into it further. I was on the one of the Facebook groups with the foundation for a while, but I get Facebook fatigue. It's just not me. But I refer to the website for myself and for some of my travelers very regularly.
So what do you mean by travelers? What does that mean?
You know, that reference just came to me in the last couple of months. I've been mentoring for about 2 years now, and I think I've got 9 travelers. And the mentor-mentee nomenclature just sounded a little clinical to me. You know, I feel like we're, and what I feel like we all are, is on a journey. And I don't feel like I'm a mentor. I feel like I'm a fellow traveler with my friends. And we share stories about traveling and about their treatments and how they're feeling. So I feel more like a companion, you know, than a mentor. I don't know. It just felt more comfortable for me.
I like the terminology. And the mentoring that you're talking about is through the foundation's Cholangio Connect program, where we meet, patients with patients, caregivers with caregivers. And so you said you were mentoring 9 people. Well, actually traveling with 9 people.
Yes. And what I learned early on, and Patty Maxson was a great help to me, especially at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Some folks will contact the foundation and ask for a mentor. And, you know, I'd get a call from Patty first or an email. Hey, are you available? And sometimes yes. And sometimes I had to tell her, you know, I'm a little overloaded right now, but, there was enough information, either email addresses or phone addresses. But at the very beginning, I didn't understand why some folks wouldn't respond. So I've got about 3 groups of travelers, folks that have made contact with the foundation, asked for a mentor. And then some are just very infrequent, contacts. I can reach out, and occasionally I'll get a, hey, thanks, Jim, you know, for something I might send out. But I always offer to help with whatever their questions or challenges are. And they go, no, I'm good. So it's very infrequent. About a third of my travelers are regular, regular travels. We're in contact every few weeks or a month. And then there's some that really engage. Mm-hmm. They, at the very beginning of their diagnosis, they dove into what that meant. How can I deal with this situation? Where do I go for help? Which is, how they found the foundation. So mm-hmm. there are different levels of engagement with travelers. And that's, Patty helped me just understand that it wasn't necessarily anything I was doing or not doing. That's the way it is.
Right. You have to meet people where they're at.
And where they are.
That's yeah, right. Exactly. And I think cholangiocarcinoma as a rare cancer is so different for everybody. It's not that everybody experiences the same thing. And so do you also mentor caregivers, or is it strictly the patients?
It's the patients, but okay. Interestingly, as I've told people what I do, I'll get a call or an email. Sometimes it's happened several times. It says, I've got a friend that's got stomach cancer. I know it's different than what you have, but they need a mentor. Will you help them? Sure. Mm-hmm. So one of my travelers is about to have her stomach removed. And when I heard that, I was horrified. But doing a little research, I guess that's a fairly common treatment for stomach, certain kinds of stomach cancer. So mm-hmm. I've had other folks, too, besides cholangio patients.
Oh, so it's kind of turned you into an advocate and a voice for people as well as a friend. I like that you consider yourself a companion. Someone that they can talk to and have their hand held when they need it.
I really do. One of my travelers just headed off on a 2-week cruise for the Scandinavian countries. But back in April, she was in bad shape in ICU in the hospital. She'd switched her doctors had switched her chemo, and she had some horribly adverse reaction. And I called Patty and I said, I'm worried about this person. She usually responds to emails very quickly. And a couple of weeks went by, and one night, and we always corresponded by email. And then mm-hmm. one evening I told my wife, well, I'm just going to call her. And I picked up the phone, called her, and she had just walked in the front door after being in the hospital for 3 weeks. And I thought, oh my goodness gracious, you poor woman. But she recuperated well enough to go on a 2-week trip. So, I'm real proud of my traveler there. She's doing really well.
Well, and I think you would know that in your travels, you're going to hit obstacles, And so as somebody who's a companion to somebody, how do you keep, or what do you recommend for optimism? How do you keep giving people hope when they may be in a situation where they've hit an obstacle really hard? What do you advise?
Yeah. And I've had some travelers who from the very beginning of their diagnosis just accepted, that that's what was going to happen. And OK, I'll just go with it. And I always encouraged them to get second opinions. And in some cases, for some of my travelers, not because of anything I said, but that was already on their list, that turned their circumstance completely around when they found the right medical team. It's a combination of, I think. Our outcomes are a combination of, it's more complicated than this, but oversimplified, the family support that we have around us, or religious support, the medical team, that we find. And then our own, I think one of the most important aspects is our own perspective. And from the traveler blog that went out, that's where it came from. One of my travelers was very down. He was very pessimistic. He was very discouraged by his early diagnosis and treatment at his local university hospital. But once he went to Mayo, he made just a 180 degree transformation. Well, there's no difference in his disease, but it was just in his perspective and how he chose to view it. And I think that's as important as anything. If we refuse to give in, I think that's as important as the medical help, medical attention that we're getting.
Exactly. I completely agree with you. And there are some people that maybe don't have that family support, but they can definitely find it at the Cholangiocarcinoma Foundation. You're proof positive of that because you're very actively involved with Cholangio Connect and helping all these travelers. Do you have any other parting words that you'd want to share?
You know, I'm going to reach out to my fellow travelers, a couple of them in particular, and they may not see themselves as potential mentors, but I do. And it just depends on whether it's the right time in their journey. So anybody that sees this caregiver, and I can't give enough credit to my wife, who took great care of me. But being a mentor gives you the opportunity to pay some of that back and pay some of that forward. So I'd encourage anybody that sees this to consider being a mentor.
And join Clangio Connect. People actually can find more information at clangioconnect.org. You can connect to us there as well at clangiocarcinoma.org. Clangiocarcinoma.org, I know it's kind of a long word, so you can also find us at curecc.org. I know that's three websites in a row, but please come find us and please give your wife a big hug for us, because like you said, that support really uplifted and carried you through your own journey of treatment and surgeries and recovery. And you're here now sharing a lovely story with us. And so I wish you continued good health. And, you know, we'll see you next time.
Thank you so much.
You bet. And everybody joining us, please join us next week for a new episode of Calangio Heroes.